Welcome to the Scottish Watches Podcast. What a week it has been. There have been many releases from many different brands. We've had the great opportunities to actually see some of these brands up close and personal, doing a little bit of a tour. Dave's been on tour, not just myself, and my tour is extended past the Scottish border, past Carlisle, Cumbria, and down into the nether regions of the UK. But we're going to jump across and ask Dave how he's doing, because we don't want him to feel left out, because we always just leave him at the sideline like a little sick puppy. He's always the last one picked at the shelter. So Dave, how are we doing today?
What, I'm being picked from the shelter? Oh.
Better than being picked for slaughter?
Oh, I don't know. Depends. That really does depend on how the week's going. Quite a bit like you, been travelling. So, it's been a busy one. I was in London Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Some exciting stuff to be seen there. Back up to Glasgow. Lots of new releases. The watch world has finally kicked into gear. You know, we've got the big boys. We've got the Omegas dropping stuff left, right and centre. We've got various other brands dropping stuff. And then, of course, only in a few short weeks, we will have everyone else in the world dropping stuff in Geneva. So yeah, exciting times.
Most definitely. But we should start as we mean to go on. We have a timeline. We're a watch podcast. It's time to do the wrist check.
Wow. Whoa. We're doing the wrist check. We're doing the wrist check within what? Like within 3 or 4 minutes?
Within 2 minutes, Dave.
Is
with the intro music, within a minute and a half.
Has Miziel got a gun to the back of your head at this point in time?
Well, he's American, but no.
But no, okay. Metaphorical gun.
He has the right to bear arms against the back of our skulls, but no, he's not done that.
No. Okay, well, I'll go first for a change. I'm feeling selfish.
It's like when you surprise me by using the other hand, Dave. It's amazing.
Ah, the cheeky numb hand. Yeah, you got to do that occasionally.
Ah, the stranger.
The stranger danger. So what am I wearing? Well, you know, on the basis that Moonshine, as we will talk about later, has reared its beautiful head again in the Omega stable, I decided to crack out the original Moonshine, that being the 50th anniversary Speedmaster. With the Moonshine Gold, has a lot more Moonshine Gold in it, including the movement compared to the new ones, and was markedly cheaper, as gold seems to have gone through the roof in price in the last 6-12 months. So I am wearing
that. Why has it got less gold in it?
The new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So as we'll come to, but we'll not spoil it, on the new ones, one of them doesn't have a gold bracelet. It's only a gold head with a rubber bracelet. And the 50th anniversary has the 3861 movement in Moonshine Gold, whereas the two new ones don't have the gold movement in them.
They actually made the bridges and plates out of gold.
Yeah, so in the 50th anniversary, the dial's gold as well. And all the watch is gold. So you've got the dial gold, case gold, bracelet gold, and the movement, major parts of the movement are gold in Moonshine as well. Whereas in the new ones, they've got the regular new 3861 movement in it, not in gold. I think it's rhodium plated. Obviously, one of them has a rubber bracelet, which we'll come to, which is actually quite cool. And the dials obviously aren't gold in the new one. They are markedly more expensive.
They certainly are, but that's just the way of the world at the moment. Everything is markedly more expensive.
This is true, including fuel. And you know, the oft heard Instagram post meme which has gone up, which is quite funny, is saw a guy filling up at pump 3 with £10. Where is he going? Pump 4, which at this point is pretty accurate, to be honest, but it is somewhat horrific. No, not especially
my favorite meme. My favorite meme at the moment is the one with Trigger from Only Fools and Horses, and he says, "The fuel crisis, the petrol prices don't affect me, Dave, because I only just fill up with £20.
Yeah, I know. I did laugh. That was a classic. That was a excellent take on the old broom sketch. I've only ever had one broom, 15 handles and 25 heads. Excellent work.
You know what? People actually recognise the red dwarfisms that we dropped in the last show. So we are among friends.
We are indeed.
That was a great show. If people haven't listened, we'll obviously do a shout out at the end because we don't want to disrupt your listening pleasure at the moment. But we had the gang all back together, minus Kat because she was busy. But we did have one Kat, wasn't I heard of them this time. And we had Adrian from Bark and Jack on. And that was a really well-received show. It was effortless to record. The edit was actually quite easy because nobody was talking over the top of each other because we've all do this professionally. And it was a joy. And even listening it back, because when I edit it, I'm obviously listening to it in depth, but listening to it back, editing, and then again afterwards to make sure that the file was okay. I just loved it. It was great. It was a great chat with real people. Loved it.
Absolutely. I mean, we might not know how to spell professional, but we are kind of professional.
Many H's are in that.
Professional. Professional. At least two. That does remind me of a watch I got. Do we remember, well, not remember, there's a watch brand, is it a brand? Well, a brand who make crafter blue straps. They did a Kickstarter years ago where they brought out a dive watch, which was actually quite a cool dive watch. But on the dial, on the very original batch, professional diver was on the dial, and they'd misspelt professional. It was spelt with two R's, which was absolutely hilarious. It's like, hilarious? That's even as bad. It was Sarah, oh God, hilarious. Guess who's going to be all over that? It's okay, Sarah, just text me, no problem. Just don't make it public. But yes, it was misspelt, which was quite funny. And they then sent out replacements with the dials printed correctly and let you keep the old one. So I do wear that occasionally to chuckle away about my professional diver.
One good thing about watching Jody's videos, there's many, more than one good thing, but one of the good things I enjoy is whenever he gets a hold of a watch from a far-flung place and the text on the dial is in English.
English.
And it is all over the shop. I can't even remember off the top of my head some of them, but Mizzelle will put some screen grabs in the show notes. This is the way we convince people to look at the show notes early in the show. Then you can follow along, see the pictures of the watches as we're talking about them, Dave. It's a great little ruse we've got going here. It's great.
Even if you can't read, loads of pictures. It's fine. Loads of pictures.
Yeah, it's like multimedia. It's like PowerPoint presentations.
Although we have derailed this just a little bit, you know, like we were kind of meant to be getting the wrist check over and done with, and we've managed to do mine so far.
We're nearly up to 8 minutes.
So, yeah, he's not noticed yet. So, Ricky, what have you got on the wrist?
Well, I'm going old school today. I'm going back to my roots. One of the first watches I bought, and it is a Seiko.
Ooh.
It's almost a grand Seiko, and I'm watching your eyes screwing up there in contempt as I utter those words into the microphone. But this here is the Seiko Prospects Diver Scuba Paddy Special, which is a Japanese import only. I got it through eBay from a seller in Switzerland at a ridiculously low price. I think it was around about the £500 mark. They were around about £900 elsewhere. Completely legit, above board, brand new at the time. And this one here has got Zeratsu polishing, which you generally don't tend to find on the less expensive models. And I call it the budget James Cameron. And there's a reason I'm wearing this today, because of the colour scheme of the dial. But it doesn't just have a wave effect on the dial. If you zoom in, or if the light catches it just right, the waves have got waves inside them. It's like a filament in an old light bulb. So under macro magnification, you can see everything. It dances in the light. The lum on it is absolutely incredible. The bezel lines up perfectly. It's one of the first things I checked. It has got this little blue anodized aluminium ring just around the underside of the bezel as well. And it has got a beautiful, lovely contouring rubber strap. It's probably the best in the business that I've seen, and the hardware is super chunky. Really like it. This is the watch that we always made a joke about that taught me how to be a master watchmaker, because it was running slow and I used a magnet to speed it up a little bit and got it to +1, +2 seconds a day, which is actually held. So I still teaching Roger Smith all these little handy nuggets of information just so he can advance his game. You know what it's like, Niall and
I. So you used the partial magnetization regulation technique.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, you know, any means to an end.
That's it. It's not a stupid idea if it works. I think that's all we're saying there. But yeah,
we'll
great watch. Never wear it because it sits in the watch box among many other friends. Never seeing the light of day.
That's the one I think that's the kind of modern reinterpretation of, I think, the 1965 diver, isn't it? It was kind of like the modern reinterpretation of the 62 Mass.
Yeah, it came out around about that time. That's what they said. But they've said every model that's come out since with a slight change is a 62 Mass re-edition. But this one genuinely is.
Yeah, that's the kind of case shape, isn't it? And I think the latest one that's been, in fact, the latest is one that's not actually out yet, but it's been announced, which is the Save the Oceans one, which is really nice looking, that we've just posted on our Instagram just in the last day or so. And just before that, the new black 2022 series came out with that case shape as well, and it is a super popular case shape. It's very wearable, it's a nice watch, and you know, even at full price, which is in or about the £1,000 mark, but £900 to £1,000 in the UK, it's a lot of watch for the money, to be honest. So yeah, you can't see far past that as a good quality little diver.
No, it's got that teardrop shape to the case like you mentioned. It reminded me of looking at one of the Datejusts where the case contours, because it's not a genuine sports watch, and it's also really thin considering, you know, as a genuine paddy stamped diver. There's nothing bad I can say about it. Everything lines up, everything's good. The polishing on it is brilliant, as you would expect. Really cool watch. And again, just feel a bit crap that I don't get to wear all the watches all the time. Yeah, and on the back, there's a little medallion style emblem kind of in, what would you say, it protrudes. Yeah, don't know what it is. It looks like a kind of wave thing, but it's not the usual Seiko wave that you see everywhere. So great little watch, and the lume on it's incredible. It always wins the Friday night lume wars or lume battles when I decide to pop photos up of it, which I've not done for a while. Gonna have to get back on that. Right, Dave, is that the wrist checks done? Is it time for the news?
I think we should crack on, because there's, you know, I mean, we are a watch podcast, and
we are So what have you been watching?
What have I been watching? Right, let's talk about the TV. That's much more interesting, isn't it? What have I been watching? Ah, do you know what? I have started watching the modern or the new take of the Ipcress file, which is just started on, well, in the, well, what we would colloquially call Channel 3, but that'll be ITV or STV. It's their kind of multi-part dramatisation, and it is excellent so far. Yeah, really, really good. I remember watching the Ipcress file film, which is, I think, well, must be the 60s or 70s that's from, based on
Michael
the book.
Caine?
I think it might be Michael Caine. I think you might be very right. But this is a kind of, it's very set in its time. So it's not a kind of up-to-date version, but it's very of its time with, you know, with a lot of what is sadly going on in this world, especially the threats that are being made, you know, about nuclear annihilation and everything else. But, you know, it's a great piece of telly, really well done. So if you're in the UK or you've got access to any streaming services abroad that you can see it, the Ipcress file from ITV is well worth the watch.
Hmm. Okay. Well, as people know, I don't generally watch television. I'll watch even less films because I consume most of my content through YouTube. That's why Adrian's view count goes through the roof when his kids are at school. But I have been looking around the interwebs for things to check out over the last week there, and I stumbled across a video from a channel that I'm subscribed to, and it's called LGR, Lazy Game Reviews. A fellow over in the States called Clint, and he does one of the best Duke Nukem impersonations you've ever heard. He goes a wander down the magical lane of PC history with gaming, technology, odds and sods, maybe things you'd have seen in PC World 20 years ago and thought, that's a bit crazy looking. And he decided to talk about the Timex Datalink watch, which came out mid-90s, around about when Windows 95 came out, which is very peculiar because the day before that, I was chatting with some folks down south that I'll get to later about this exact watch and how this reminded me of watches being fun as well as functional. And this was probably one of the first ever smartwatches that communicated with some kind of data peripheral. It was a one-way data transfer. Basically, the screen would have lines on it and they would modulate. The detector, the photoresistor on the front of the watch would actually pick up the light patterns and convert it to data and store it in the watch. So you could move all your appointments and your alarms straight from the PC right across to your wrist. And that was the first time that ever happened. So he did a deep dive and he did a ton of these ones. I didn't realise there was so many iterations. But over the years, there was Iron Man ones. There was ones that had multi-segment LCDs as well as just the normal figure of eight ones. Really cool video. The guy is really personable, down to earth, explains it in a funny way. And he would be great on the show. I wonder if he's actually into watches more, because he would be cool. He sent from his PC to his wristwatch an alarm for the next day, and he said it's the only thing he needed to do, and it went beep beep, and the wee display came up and it said fart.
Brilliant. Time
thought,
to fart.
Yep, that's time to fart. That's it. Let the methane out. Also decided to go a trip, met up with a friend I've not seen for at least 2 years, at least since COVID happened, probably 3 years, and we did a trip through Glasgow. So we started off going down to the infamous Barrowlands, the Barras, and had a look for, well, it's better now. It used to be I would head down maybe every 2 or 3 years, because as a kid in Glasgow, it's one of those things that you would just go to. You're attracted because all the scum and villainy is down
yeah,
there.
I was about to say it's like the Cantina Bar from Star Wars. That's pretty much exactly what it's like.
It is, and you don't know if you're going to get a bargain or a sore bum when you go down there. So I went down as a kid, and I think I have told this story in the show before, and they used to sell knockoff counterfeit pirate video games for all types of systems. This is back in the days of the Amiga and the Atari ST. And the PC was coming on board, and I've always been a PC guy. So I would go down with my pocket money and buy maybe one knockoff game because they were expensive back in the day. But as a bit of a Robin Hood thing, and tying in with what we talked about with Catelyn and Adrian, that was around the time that bum bags were kind of fashionable. So I would head down with a loose jumper, Catelyn's listening, she likes the word jumper, sweatshirt, and a bum bag underneath, and I'd go down, I'd maybe buy one game so that I would set their fears to the side that nothing bad was going to happen. And then I would liberate the software into my bum bag one at a time. So they've ripped off and stolen all this software, and I was just stealing it back for the good guys. So I'd end up with like 20 games instead of one. It's great.
Is that the old two wrongs make a right?
Yeah, it reverses a polarity twice.
Brilliant, perfect, back to the you know, it's all, I mean, the universe is at ease and at one.
I was a freedom fighter. I was liberating the software.
You were a freedom
fighter. Scumbags.
Yeah. Brilliant. That's the best bit, isn't it? It's like, the only problem is when you get caught, they don't call the police. They just kick your head in.
I was a wee guy, you know, I could have just said, oh, you know, it's me. It's just, I was, what age would I have been? I'd have been like very, very young, probably 10 or something like that. So that's what I got to. So that was, long story short, went to the Barras. It's now different. And I think the thing has been eBay kicked its arse, because you used to go down there and find odds and sods and bargains. That doesn't really happen because the stall holders know what they've got. They research it. They're not stupid. But maybe 3 years ago before COVID, there was always that pungent smell because every weekend the traders would just eat their food and throw the scraps in the corner, and there was rats infestation. There was smells, all kinds of stuff, because it closed down for a couple of years pretty much. All of that just went away. So you go down and it smells like a normal place. There's not any dirt, litter, stuff. It just felt completely different. And the reason we went down is my friend John is making a music video, and it's including lots of World War II type stuff. And there are many memorabilia stands that sell all kinds of stuff, from war medals to helmets to holsters to satchels. And we had a great little look down there. And that's where I stumbled across an ancient IWC from the 1950s and popped on Instagram. Did you see that post?
I did. Really cool wee thing. Your little Broad Arrow, one of the kind of Dirty Dozen watches from, you know, I guess before they were, you know, shortened to IWC. It was International Watch Company, and it's got the little Broad Arrow on there, tritium dial. Looks, you know, from the picture, you know, it clean, bit tatted up, but you would expect that from that kind of watch, you know. But yeah, really cool wee piece that to get your hands on. It's a pretty funky little thing, you know. That's the kind of thing that collectors will absolutely go for. And it just shows you, always keep your eyes open, because you're never sure where you'll come across a little nugget like that.
Yeah, this opened up some doors immediately, because I saw it in his display cabinet, as I say, with war medals, memorabilia, tobacco tins, all kinds of stuff like that, from ranging from a pound or two up to this that was, I think he'd priced it around about £4,500. And I asked him about it. I said, can I see it out? He brought it out, had a look, and I went, right, how much? Told me the price of it. Right, no worries. And then I must have said something that let him know that I knew a little bit about watches, because then he rolled his sleeve up and showed me his 1972 Rolex GMT Master.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, okay, you're a braver man than me wearing that round these here parts, but okay. And he kind of tilted his head as I was speaking to him, because he thought, right, okay, this dude knows a little bit about watches. So we had a little back and forward, and I said, yeah, obviously. I deal with the contemporary stuff. We've met the guys at IWC many times. We do certain things with them. And he just started talking about watches. And my pal started to get more and more bored listening to us talking about watches when he's looking at rifle rounds and all kinds of memorabilia from World War II. But no, I did that. There was three different stands down there that had vintage watches to check out, but we were running out of time. So we went from there, went around to three memorabilia stands in the Barrows. There's loads of other stuff as well. And we headed up to the Kelvin Grove Art Galleries, where they had a photography exhibition covering Glasgow from the 70s through to the 80s. So much has changed, so much has stayed the same. Some of those massive buildings do not look much different. And then we went to the Comic-Con down at the SEC on the River Clyde. And I'd not been there again for 3 years. They haven't been around. Went in. It didn't feel quite as good as it used to, because people were apprehensive of social distancing. You're still supposed to wear masks in Scotland for another week or so. But it just felt like the first normal day since COVID, where people were out and about enjoying things, going from one thing to the other. And the rules were so lackadaisical that if you didn't want to, you didn't feel pressured into doing certain things. So really enjoyed that. And the last thing I'll tell you before we get back into the watch news, although I have mentioned watch news all the way throughout, you know, got to keep it in there.
Got to keep it relevant.
Keep it relevant. It is a watch podcast. I've been listening to a lot of Stephen Fry talks on YouTube, because he is a master wordsmith in the oral form. And listening to him talk about anything is mesmerizing and captivating. And he was talking, I think it was at Cambridge, he was talking about different things. And he says when he would go filming or recording a documentary somewhere, he would buy a tie in that location. And whenever he would pick the tie up or wear the tie, he would remember the good times back then. And I thought in my head, that's exactly what I do when I go somewhere. I'll buy a souvenir watch. And it just so happens, thanks to Dave telling me about the destination watches that Swatch do pretty much all around the world, they're the go-to because they're fairly inexpensive. They're cool looking, they're great, and it is a souvenir. But he was talking about, you know, everything he puts that certain tie on, it reminds him of filming such and such a thing. And it's like tying a knot in a hanky to remember, which is something my gran used to always talk about. So you see a knot in something, you're like, why did I do that? And your brain automatically fires off and you remember what it was supposed to be. And I think that's tying thoughts and memories to an object and bringing you that warm fuzzy feeling. If you've never listened to Stephen Fry's stuff and you're just knowing of him through perhaps QI or back in the day Blackadder, he is a really, really intelligent fella, and you should go and check out some of his stuff that'll be linked in the show notes.
Absolutely. Can wholeheartedly agree with that. He's just, as you say, mesmerizing is probably the best way to, you know, kind of describe him. He deep dives and he researches what he's going to talk about as well. He doesn't just kind of wing it and try and get away with it. You know, you can tell that he's put time and love and kind of effort into researching what he's going to talk about. So yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's just, it really, unlike us, really easy to listen to.
Yeah. He narrates the Harry Potter series on Audible.
Yeah.
And people just love that. So there we go. That's what I've been up to. Dave, what have you been up to?
I've already told you, but I've not actually.
Did you? Don't get that.
No, I haven't really. So what have I been up to? Well, I, as I mentioned earlier, have been down south for a good few days, 4 days. And
you've been down south, mate. You've been down south. Saint Paul Fortinet.
Yeah, down in that London town. Yeah, that's where I've been.
Were you down at the Chicken Dippers?
Chicken Dippers.
Playing all the frappany bits. The Bristol City's net.
Yeah, if only, mate, if only. So, what have I heard? Oh, God, you've got me completely off train now. So, what was up to? I was down catching up with a few people, some good friends, and also spent some time catching up with George from the Bamford Watch Department at his townhouse. And he very graciously gave me a very deep insight to a lot of what's coming, most of which, unfortunately, I can't talk about. But what I can say is, from his own brand, he's got a stable of watches that are marketed under Bamford, his own brand, and he's got some pretty exciting things coming, both some straight Bamford watches and some collaboration Bamford watches coming, which are pretty exciting stuff. Quite a few different products coming over the next few months. And he was also giving me a bit of an insight into some collaborations with other watch brands that we, again, unfortunately can't talk about at this point. But needless to say, from what I saw, pretty exciting stuff. You know, that is a business that has gone from, you know, kind of modifying watches, inverted commas, unofficially for many years, moving through now to, you know, working with lots of brands, whether that be Zenith, whether it be Gerard Perregaux, whether it be Tag Heuer. He's worked with our friend James at Black Badger, you know, loads of projects. He's done G-Shocks, etc., etc. So he's done some really cool official collabs now, and I was really lucky to spend a bit of time with him and get a good look through what's coming, which was really good of him because he didn't need to show us that stuff. Yeah, really good time. And he's just, you know, a really down-to-earth, really good guy. And again, he very graciously talked to us about the podcast and told us how much he actually enjoyed it. And we know that he does a podcast of his own.
Does he actually listen to the show? Or is he just buttering you up?
No, he was telling me away about how he was listening to our inane ramblings on the way in that morning, and he was laughing away, and he suggested that we come onto his podcast in the near future, which would be great. And we really do need to get him back on, because a lot has happened with what he's been doing since he was last on as well. So yeah, good guy, you know, really down to earth for someone for us to talk to who does some really cool projects. So yeah, that was great fun. So that I did, had a chat with some of my friends at Omega, obviously with a lot of the releases that are, well, that were coming at that point and are now out and about, and a little bit of a sniff around a few other things that I can't say too much about just now, but within the next couple of weeks we'll be able to talk about. So yeah, that's what took up most of my week, to be honest. So that felt really good.
Well, you mentioned Omega there, and that is the big hot topic of the week, and you are Mr. Omega. So Dave, what have they been up to?
Well, as we know, they're a brand who really pulled away from the big multi-brand shows a good few years ago and started doing their own thing. And again, they have released a suite of their new watches for 2022. And there was a fair number of releases in different families. There was something in the Speedmaster family. There was something in the Aquaterra family. But for me, the big news was in the Seamaster family, specifically the Planet Ocean Seamaster family, where the Planet Oceans have had, I'm going to say, a long-awaited makeover. Not to say that the existing watches were tired by any means. I think they still look quite contemporary, but they haven't really had much of a fettle in a good few years. And they really have brought a few new toys to the playground, one of which I am extremely taken by and will absolutely be acquiring one at the soonest possible opportunity. So maybe we could start there. So within the new Planet Oceans, there are a total, I guess, of 4 new watches, one of which we'll talk about on its own, 3 of which are all interrelated. So let's talk about the exciting one first. And that exciting one we're going to talk about...
Is it the Ben Climber?
Is it the Ben Climber? Going deep, 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 deep. So this is the Titanium Ultra Deep. And honestly, I really don't care what anyone else thinks. This is a really cool watch. This is a watch that really is the production version of the Ultra Deep watch that back in 2019 was the watch that went down to just shy of 11,000 meters and it was submerged for the best part of 54 hours, just shy of that, I think 53 hours and 52 minutes, and broke a series of records. Now, this is a watch that was never in its form that it was used there going to make it to production. Too big, too cumbersome, not really wearable. It was done as a technical exercise. But that said, they've managed to take all of the DNA and technologies learnt through that design and that experiment and brought it into a production watch that, frankly, is a big lump of a watch, but I think it is absolutely outstanding. The big bit you'll notice, first of all, about this watch is the lug design, which is pretty unusual. The name that Omega have given it is the Manta lug design, which looks very much like a fixed lug bar, similar to what you may have seen on the Pelagos FXD. But this is slightly different in that it's got a split in the bar that allows you to kind of slide a strap in at an angle as opposed to having to feed it through. Quite a nice design there as well. This watch, one of the downsides, I suppose, for some people is that you can't mount this to a bracelet or you can't mount it to a rubber strap. It can only be used with a NATO style strap or some form of kind of woven or flexible strap, which for me isn't a problem. I mean, this is a watch that's not going to be a watch that people will be buying as a daily wearer in most cases. It's a bit of a more specialist product. I would look at this watch as more like the very latest in the kind of Ploprof type product. You know, it's going to be bought by either professional people wanting to use it as a genuine tool watch, or it's going to be bought by people who just want something really quite funky and different and don't need to worry about things like getting a watch under a shirt cuff. But a few other features about this watch is it is a full titanium case. It has a ceramized titanium bezel on it. It has a titanium dial as well. This watch, interestingly, is one of the very few watches that is actually certified to the ISO 6425 standard. Now, there are quite a few watches that, inverted commas, meet those standards, but there are very few that are actually certified to this standard, and this watch is one of them. To be certified, it actually has to pass 9 specific tests, those being visibility, magnetism, temperature cycling, water resistance, general shock resistance of attachment, a free fall test, a salt spray test, and a helium gas overpressure test. So there's lots of tests that this watch has to pass, and this has, which means that it can be stamped on the case back as force saturation diving, which this watch again is. Now, really cool technologies in this watch, and I just think it looks absolutely amazing. Don't know what you think. Have you had a look at this specific watch?
While all these watches were coming out, I was busy doing lots of stuff, so I've only managed, I know it's horrible because it's Omega and I should have been paying attention, but they decided to drop it in one of my business weeks. So I've been learning through people on Instagram and pretty much through memes. But this one here, what do I think of it? I like the look of it. I love everything about it. I love the fact that it goes to that 6,000 meter depth, but it still doesn't look like an engineering sample. It looks like a watch. We recently were sent in, I think it was a Spinnaker, the Picard. And it had like this, it's a massive chunky watch, helium escape valve, and it goes to a big, big depth, and it had almost like a glass marble sapphire on it. And some of the Rolexes from back in the day where they took them to the depths of the oceans, it was again like a ball of crystal on the front. One of the things that got me with this was the crystal didn't appear to be mental. And when I read up about it, they had used a new process to actually grow the synthetic sapphire crystal for the front of this watch. And they got it down to a point where it would accept over 7 tons of pressure without cracking on the crystal of the watch, which kind of blows my mind the way they've done that. We'll include some links in the show notes. I think it's called Edge Define Film Fed Growth. So new technology, refined technologies all around, and the pricing on it as well. That was something that stood out to me as not being absolutely crazy for the amount of technology they've obviously included here, the way they've used different materials that are all going to work together. Because it reminds me of back in science when they talked about different materials, for instance, bimetallic strips. Things heat up at different points. Different materials react to pressures. When you're going to exponential lengths of that depth, if you've got one grade of titanium versus another grade versus a crystal versus this, they're all going to move ever so slightly at different variations as they deal with the pressures. and to actually bring it all together and have everything in a cohesive form where all the parts are merged and they're not going to fight each other. I think it's really, really good. And the looks of it, again, they look really, really nice.
Yeah, I think as you said, you know, unlike the Ploprof, this is a watch that, as you say, does look more normal, whereas the Ploprof does have that kind of engineering sample type look to it. Obviously, this is a watch that has been iterated a little, but has barely changed since its original inception. This looks like a much more day-to-day watch. You know, other things about it, you know, 45.5 mil. So again, not ridiculously large. Just over 18 millimetres thick, 56 lug to lug. So, you know, for the technical depth specification of this watch, it's not ridiculously large. The other thing that's interesting about the titanium watch is there are four patents that are currently pending to do with the construction of this watch. Some of those, in fact, two of those patents relate to the construction of the sapphire crystal, which is actually 5.2 millimetres thick. So it's a pretty thick bit of crystal in there as well. One is for the conical design of the crown to ensure that it has got a stress distribution, and there's a patent pending about the case back construction and its gap for its gasket. All of these mean that it removes the requirement for a helium escape valve or a monoblock case, which makes sure that nothing will happen in the decompression chamber. So again, much more conventional construction. Normally a lot of things like solid case backs or helium valves are needed to ensure these watches can be used for saturation diving, and this watch does away with all of those things as well, which is less things to concern yourself about in this watch. But moving on, maybe into what would be regarded as the more mainstream versions of this watch, which still do hold the 6,000 meter water resistant pressure test, is the steel versions.
Mega steel.
Which, not going to lie, I mean, clever, but a bit cheesy. But, you know, there's lots of things like that in the watch world. But, you know, kind of
But they've
cool.
got oyster steel. What are we going to do?
Yeah, kind of cool, kind of a bit cheesy, but we'll go with it. We'll go with it. There are three models in the steel, but six options, in that they can all be ordered either on a bracelet or on a rubber strap. So effectively three models, you choose a steel bracelet or you choose the rubber strap. These, again, with the ISO 6425 certification, lots of these features are identical to the titanium model. This new Omega steel is rated that it's harder. It's 300 Vickers. It's harder than 316L or 904L steel. It does have a little bit more elasticity like titanium, which means that it doesn't stay deformed once it's been exposed to these great depths that it's rated to as well. And it gives it a slightly whiter colour and a nicer shine to it, I believe, is what they're saying, compared to regular stainless steels. Coming in at 45.5 with, again, a height of 18.12 millimetres. The only difference is that it's slightly shorter lug to lug, coming in at just shy of 52 instead of 56 mil. But that's because it has a conventional lug to allow you to mount the bracelet or the strap to it as well. It has a symmetrical case as opposed to the asymmetric case on the titanium watch, but it does have the titanium case back using those same technologies in the case back that are on the titanium watch, which is pretty cool. Again, not needing that helium escape valve, which will please lots of people. Colour options, there's a black and blue, an orange and grey-black, and a blue and white option. 22mm lug width, tapering to 18mm at the clasp. They have a new clasp, which actually looks really nice. It looks much more integrated into the bracelet in terms of when it's closed. It's also designed to scratch less than a normal clasp due to that kind of extra hardness on the new Omega steel. Cool looking watch. And as you said, for all of these watches, coming in and around the 10,000 UK mark for the steel versions and in and around the 11,000 UK mark for the titanium, I personally think these are a whole lot of watch for the money compared to a lot of the other stuff that's out there. And before anyone says it, no, it doesn't look like a James Cameron. There are lots of divers with black bezels and blue dials out there, and it's probably as far from a James Cameron as you can get while still being a dive watch. And it's not like this watch family is new. Omega haven't suddenly jumped onto the deep dive watch sphere. They've done deep dive watches for a long time, so I am going to defend it from the memes, although the memes are quite funny, to be honest.
Well, Dave, let's stop you there, since you've just walked into the lion's den, the token Christian in the room.
Here we go.
Right, so here's a wee story for you. The Aquaterra range gets announced this week. And then one of the members of our team, who perhaps could be one of us but with Photoshop skills, made a meme with Mr. Bean and some logos and some Rolex OPs and some new Aquaterras, right?
Okay, yeah.
Which got a good reaction on Instagram. I think it's around about 1,300 likes, that kind of thing. So really good. Better than when we actually post legit content. The memes seem to do better. So anyway, there's me in Heathrow, Terminal 5, walking around, killing some time before my flight. And I walk into the Omega mini boutique that they've got as part of Watches of Switzerland. Keen to see these new watches that have been released this week. And that's obviously a massive destination point. Lots of people coming through, lots of rich folks. I thought they would have the new stuff in because Ian over at Wallace Allen in Ayr has got the entire stock allocation sitting in his store. He sent me some photographs of it and said, do I want to pop in? And I was obviously down south. So anyway, I asked the assistant, do you have the new watches from Omega? Oh, yes, we do. Come on over and have a look. I was all excited about this. Went over, had a look, and it wasn't. It was last year's releases. And I said, no, the new ones. Oh, these are the most current. I'm like, no. Have you not got the new Aquaterras? Oh, don't know anything about them. Are you sure they're new? Yes, I'm quite sure. So I pull out my phone, go on Instagram, and I'm thinking, what's the quickest way of me finding a picture of these watches? Ah, my meme. So I go to her page, load up the meme, kind of shielding the phone away from her, and then I pinch into Zoom. So the entirety of my phone screen is perhaps the red Aquaterra. And I turn it around and I say, no, these ones here. And she looks at it and says, isn't that a Rolex? Yeah. Case closed.
No, I'm going to take you to task in that.
Don't take me to task. Take the Omega employee to task who didn't know their own product range.
That's a fair point. But let's actually look at this. Superficially, I am more than sure lots of people, including me maybe, did go, oh, there's maybe a bit of a resemblance there. And possibly there is.
Look at you, Mr. Politician.
I know you like that. But stainless steel, entry-level, sports-ish watch. So we've got the OPs. OP's time only, has no date. They are pretty poppy colours on the OP's as well. Whereas the colourways and the colour palette on these new Aquaterras are brighter colours for sure, in terms of they're not silver or black or blue or a deep green. They are brighter terracottas and kind of brighter colours, but they're nothing to me as bright as a lot of the colours that are used in these OPs. It does have a date, and it's quite an unusual date because it's not a framed date window, it's a stamped as a cut-out date window, which some folk have commented they're not keen on. I actually quite like it. There's a variety of different processes. The dials, some are PVD-coated dials and some are CVD-coated dials on here as well to get different kind of effects on it as well. And it's just a slightly different watch. The other big thing, which may actually be of interest to a lot of people, is a lot of people with OP were really upset that Rolex dropped the 39mm size and they went to the 36 and then jumped to the 41. These are 38mm, which for a lot of people will be very much a sweet spot in terms of size of watch on the wrist. So I think people will change their tune slightly when they see these. I'm sure the Rolex fanboys will still jump up and down and say the OP, oh, it's so much better. Oh, look at the retained value. Oh, look, when I buy one, it doubles in value, triples in value. Yeah, whatever. But, you know, try go buy an OP in a shop. Good luck. You won't get one. Whereas these will be accessible. These will be a nice size. And I think they'll be different enough when you see them in real life. You know, Rolex by no means have the suite on colour dialed watches.
Well,
yeah, they
I'll
got their
stop
first.
You there because...
Well, here we go again. Here we go.
Well, you know what? I was going to defend you. I was going to be nice to you. But you're a wee dick, so I'm not going to.
Right, okay. Defend me, fuck you.
I was going to say that when Rolex dropped all their OPs, we called them the Doxa Perpetuals because it followed on from Doxa having all the really vibrant colours, some pastel shades, some really vibrant different iterations, and then Rolex brought their ones out. So yeah, they're not the first people to use different colours on the dials. I think the thing that caught people was there was a slew of releases from Omega that looked, those ones looked like the OPs, and then certain Speedmasters that came out slightly looked like this, and then a Seamaster slightly looked like a Hulk, and there was like a version of, it was like ordering a Rolex from Wish.com, that kind of idea. There was just so many of them in the one go instead of lots of variations.
Yeah, sure. I mean, quickly touching on those couple of other releases that you mentioned, the one being the Seamaster Diver 300, which is exactly the same as the existing watches, but they brought one out in the wave dial with a nice kind of deep green colour dial and bezel, which is a handsome looking watch. It looks absolutely nothing like a Hulk, apart from the fact that it's some green in it, but that is a great looking watch, actually. I'm really kind of excited to physically see one of those in the real life. I think that's a great looking watch. And then the other thing that'll be exciting for a few folk, as long as you have deep pockets, is Moonshine is back. And as we know, the Moonshine Speedmaster came out in 2019 for Apollo 50th anniversary. And then over the last couple of years, they've brought out a couple with Canopus Gold and Sedna Gold. But they have done two new releases of the Speedmaster in Moonshine. One with a full bracelet and one with a rubber strap on a Moonshine Gold deployant clasp. Both of these are handsome looking watches. Again, the green dialed one, especially for me on the bracelet, is a great looking watch. And then there's a kind of panda dialed one on the black rubber strap. Not personally so sure about the rubber strap on it. I mean, it's got a look to it. Not sure if it's my look. I think it might look quite nice on a leather strap on the deployant clasp rather than rubber. And this is coming from someone who typically likes a rubber strap more than a leather strap, but not sure a Speedy looks great on a rubber strap. And before anyone starts, I'm not talking about it pretending to be a dive watch, yada yada yada. I like rubber straps sometimes on dressier watches. Just don't quite think it works with this, in my opinion. But the Panda dial looks absolutely great on this watch as well. These are similar to the Moonshine Gold 50th anniversary. The main differences being that they've now got the new clasp on them. So instead of tapering down from 20 to 14, they taper down from 20 to 15, with the new clasp having the micro adjust facility in it, which was something that's definitely been asked for. So that's a nice little addition. The only other difference is that the movement is not the Moonshine Gold movement. It's the regular 3861 movement, as opposed to the Moonshine Gold based movement that's in the 50th anniversary watch. But with the price of gold being through the ceiling at the moment, the price of these watch has increased considerably from 2019, when the Moonshine Gold 50th anniversary launched. How many times have I said Moonshine 50th anniversary? Probably too many, but you know, we'll go with it.
Well, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works and say that my favourite of the releases is the picture that Mizzielle put on our Instagram a couple of days ago. And that's the Speedy. That's the Bicompact's design with the red dial.
The Speedy 57.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, it's a funny one. They've got a few new Speedy 57s out as well, and they've made quite a few nice improvements, thinned it down a little
bit. Why are they called the 57?
It's based on one of the original CKs from 1957. The more recent versions up to now have been quite thick, mainly because it's been the Speedmaster with an auto movement in it, whereas, as we know, most Speedies are manual wind. But for the new releases in these one, they have thinned the watch down and gone back to a manual wind movement, a very similar movement to what's been used on the Chronoscopes. So this allows the watch to bring that kind of thickness of the case down more into the realms of what you would expect from a Speedmaster. And yeah, I agree. There's some handsome looking colours in there. And that kind of, are you talking about the kind of burnt red type colourway that's on there?
Yeah, kind of almost burgundy.
Yeah, good looking watch.
I like that. I don't see the Speedmasters with the twin subdials getting the same love as the tri-sub dials. And I don't know why, because they look more modern, they look more elegant. They're not better finished, but they look better finished for some reason. Maybe it's because there's less clutter and your eye can focus in on the details more. But that was the one that stood out to me. And maybe it stood out to me because there isn't a comparison. There isn't a red-dialed Daytona currently that I know of kicking around. The last red-dialed chronograph was probably maybe a Tudor in the Prince lineup. I seem to remember something there. And it's a red is a colour that I've mentioned in the show we don't see enough of. Grand Seiko had that incredible one that we accidentally stumbled across at James Porter and Son that shouldn't have been in their window but was. And I still regret not buying that, and only held back because it didn't tick all the Grand Seiko boxes that still nothing has. Spring drive, hidden power reserve, great looking dial. I wouldn't buy one because I don't need one just now. But if I was in the market for a new Speedmaster, I'd seen all these releases, I'd probably go for that one. I really like the gold ones, but as you mentioned earlier, the price of gold is insane. I don't expect it to tumble, but I also don't need it, and I don't need to buy into that. I can get a hold of a nice bronze watch, and I look after my bronze watches, so they look almost gold in appearance. So yeah, I think the red one for me, even the green one that's kind of a subdued dark green, similar obviously as the red one, that again, it works great. And they've got the color match date disc, which is obviously my big Achilles heel with watches, whereas their Aquaterras didn't have the color match date discs. So yeah, speedy wise, those are my picks. Do I like the gold ones? Yes, I do. I just think at a quick brief glance, they look quite similar to the casual layman, or just a brief look. Yeah, that looks like a Daytona, especially the one on the rubber.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, there's always going to be comparisons made. A couple of points on a few things. Back on the Speedmaster, the 57, the fact they've reduced it, they've also reduced it down from 41.5mm to 40.5mm in diameter, and it's slimmed down substantially from over 16mm to just under 13mm. So there's a fairly substantial reduction in thickness, and it's bringing it down to that almost perfect 40mm size for a lot of people. So, you know, a 40mm chronograph will allow it to be worn by people with smaller wrists, which will, you know, I think make that watch more accessible. One of the challenges with the regular Speedmaster is it's just that little bit big for a few people. I like a bigger watch, but a lot of people find it just that little bit big. So, you know, you're looking at kind of 20% reduction in thickness, which is pretty substantial. On the gold ones, the other pretty cool thing that I didn't mention is the one on the rubber strap, albeit not my thing, the rubber strap's pretty funky in that the inside of the rubber strap is textured to represent the surface of the moon, which is quite a nice little touch on the inside of that rubber strap. So yeah, they've got some really cool launches to me, but for all of the launches, and with me being a Speedmaster fan, the absolutely killer one is the Titanium Deep Blue. I think that is an absolutely brilliant watch, and I will absolutely be after that. I think that will go as a lovely little partner in the watch case to the Plo Prof.
Okay, of all these watches, you having lots of background knowledge and having spoken to the teams behind them, are any of these going to be hard to come by? When are they likely to hit the shelves? Because, as I mentioned, Wallace Allen and Ayer have got them. So if you're nearby or you're wanting a nice little trip into a watch place, can't recommend them highly enough. Watch the Switzerland Omega seem to not have them yet. What ones are limited? What ones are limited production? What is the outlook on these watches?
So things like the gold Speedmasters are going to be hard to come by for a few reasons. One being they don't make many, and two, not a lot of ADs will necessarily stock that watch, with it being a very high-end premium piece. So they will genuinely be a little harder to come by. So if you're interested in one of those, definitely worth getting a word in now. The 57 Speedies, they will be generally relatively straightforward. I believe the official date is around about April that they'll be available from, so very near to now. The Aquaterras will generally be pretty straightforward to get your hands on as well. They shouldn't be overly problematic. And the Omega Steel, sorry, I get a bit laugh every time I say that. The Omega Steel Planet Oceans should be relatively straightforward to get hands on. The Titanium one might be a little more difficult to get your hand on, but I, again, don't think that will be because they are not making enough and everyone's falling over themselves to buy it. I think it's just that it might not be a particularly core line for a lot of ADs. I'm sure the boutiques will have them, but not necessarily super common for the ADs, because it's going to be a bit like the Plo Prof, a bit of a connoisseur's choice and a bit of a kind of left field choice for people to wear. So I think the vast majority of these will be relatively straightforward to come by, and if they're not immediately available, should be available reasonably quickly, with the exception of the Moonshine Gold ones, which will be a little bit more challenging to get your hands on. But I'm sure if you go in with money in your pocket and ask for one, it shouldn't be a ridiculous wait to get your hands on one of these. Well, a gun only works if they've kind of got it there and then, because you can't really get
display model.
Well, yeah, you better hope they've got a display one, because, you know, getting in with a gun and going, oh, I'll leave a deposit, a 9mm deposit, and I'll be back in a few months, probably isn't going to work out well for you.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'll scribble that one off the whiteboard then. Any other watches from Omega that we've missed? Any little sneaky ones that have fallen down the back of the couch?
None that I can immediately think of, but I'm bound to have missed one or two by now. There's a few bits and bobs, but I'm sure we can move on and come back to them, because there's a few other things that we've got to talk about in this show, which if we can squeeze in.
No, we can't. We can squeeze one thing in. This was going to be a mixture of Omega and Bremont stuff, because they released a whole slew of new watches and I got to go down and check out the Wing for the first time. We get invited 2019 when we had Nick on the show for the first Bremont interview, and he said, oh, we've got great things happening, you guys should come down, check it all out. Then COVID happened. But they launched the wing last summer. They've obviously ironed out all the snagging, teething issues with a new multi-million pound complex. And I went down along with a whole load of other bloggers, journalists, podcasters, YouTube people to check things out there. I had a great time. But we don't have enough time to discuss the new watches, the releases, the people that I spoke to, the engineering, because we obviously work with the guys at THG Plus and Arage, and they're their technology partner for working on new movements and things. I got to see a lot more, and I got to speak to a lot more people than perhaps most of the press would be interested in or would be invited to. So I can do a deep dive on that in the next episode where we're chatting about this kind of stuff. But before we do finish up, we can talk about the new PRX, because Tissot can do no wrong. And they have taken the Valjoueta 7753, dropped it into the PRX, and the price on it is incredibly slim.
This is a handsome, handsome looking watch.
You know what gets me? It's the pushers. The pushers sell it.
Yeah, there's lots to me. I mean, I've not physically handled one yet. Hopefully in the near future I will. But it also looks like it's just that one grade up from the existing ones in terms of the kind of bracelet quality and a few other little features on it as well. This genuinely is a really, I mean, the PRX is a handsome looking watch regardless of whether it's your entry level quartz or your Powermatic, but this is altogether just a little bit more special. I think it's a fantastic looking watch. Personally, for me, can't quite make a mind up. I think it would be the blue dial version for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the blue with the white and the silver. The one thing is, I've never been a big fan of stainless steel mixed with white, black, and gold. I was like that with the original Tudor Black Bay 58, which was black, gold, and stainless steel. And then they brought the blue one out and I was all over the blue one. Just, I don't know what it is about that aesthetic that doesn't quite do it for me, but the kind of white sub-dialed, blue dialed silver hand version is a extremely good looking watch for me. The other one, I'm sure lots of people will like it as well, because let's be honest, the Black Bay 58 and that kind of colour palette was lovely as well. But yeah, super nice. 42 millimetre in diameter. Movements 30 mil in diameter. I think if you'd thrown the kind of, it's slightly smaller case, it wouldn't have looked quite right. Those rectangular pushers are absolutely killer in this watch. It gives it that slightly kind of vintage vibe to it as well. I just think it looks it looks significantly more expensive than the number of pennies that they're looking for in this watch, which is unbelievably less than €1,500. And in wow. And about the £1,200-1,300 mark. Not available till the middle of the year. It's not limited edition, so you should be able to get your hands on it. I think maybe there might be a wee run of them initially, just when they first launch, because it will be popular. But I think I'm going to struggle to not buy one of these, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have held off buying a PRX. And I think the reason is, I knew that there was always something newer coming down the line. And when it was the first one that was the quartz, it was beautiful. We got sent one by the guys down at Dura Watches, CW Sellers, loved it, did some fantastic photography of it. And I just knew in the back of my head, this was going to be a winner. It was going to be another Q-Timex. It was going to be another Casio-Oct. And then they brought out the automatic one. Then they brought out the gold one. And then this has come out. But I think this is the point where you have to buy something. In computer technology, you're always told buy when you want, because you could always wait 6 months and it'll be a faster one, a less expensive one, more memory, more hard drive, more graphics power. You need to jump on at some point. And I think this is the one with those pushers on the side. At that price point, I would be an absolute idiot not to pick one up. And I like the one that's got the striated, it looks white, but it's probably silver dial, because the one you like, the date window at the sort of 4:30 position, I understand it needs to be there. It's a 7753. My Tudor has got one, but it stands out too much. Whereas on that, it kind of blends in a little bit more. And if they didn't have the date function on it, I would be all over that even quicker.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. The one that I'm not so keen on, the dial will probably be more like an opaline silver rather than the white. For me, though, the thing that gets it isn't the dial, it's the gold hands and the kind of gold parts that I just I've never been a fan of gold and stainless steel watches, strangely enough. It just doesn't do it for me.
But do you not like the fact it's all enclosed on the dial and the indices instead of bleeding out to the bezel, bleeding out to the hardware, the pushers, the center links? The fact it's all contained and then you've got the bezel surrounding it, does that not give enough separation?
Do you know what? It's very well done for that, but I still just can't get myself past that whole thing. You know, the one exception, strangely Strangely enough, I've got to that. It's the Girard Perregaux, which is a stainless steel case with a black onyx dial, but with the rose gold battens and hands. But the thing with that is, the rose gold's just that little bit less harsh than you normally get, with that kind of more 24 karat gold look that you get. And also the black dial just sinks in.
That looks rose gold to me. That doesn't look like normal gold.
It may be, and I should probably hold judgment until I've physically seen one. But when I see it against the blue one with the silver hands and the silver marks, it would be a no-brainer for me. It would absolutely be the blue option.
Oh, well, I'm glad we don't agree on anything. It makes the show far more interesting.
Absolutely. The good thing as well is, though, that when we both get one, we'll get the different ones and we can just look at them and go, oh, cool, cool.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll get a multi-pack deal from Tissot. But there we go. There's so much information out there this week. Never got to touch on all the things I wanted to speak about. So I'm going to take control of the next show and tell you exactly what was happening down south, because there is a lot. There's a lot happening and there's a lot about to be happening. Plus, we have Watches and Wonders coming up. And there are many other brands that have dropped releases in the past week that we didn't even get near, including a semi-transparent dialed Christopher Ward, which there is actually a review on the website. Mark Wheeler has put that together, so you can go and check that one out since we didn't get a chance to touch on it. And the Seiko release that you mentioned earlier on as well, which we never got near. So we will hold them on the sidelines, ready to rock, ready to jump onto the field, and we will bring them to you in our next edition, which will be after, fingers crossed, if all goes according to plan, our Fiona Kruger edition, which we've been trying to get set up since we were over in Dubai and had a chat with her in person. So that will be Fiona Kruger, Barbara Palumbo, Dave and myself this Thursday. And I think I've said before, she basically grew up less than 20 minutes away from where me and Dave stay. So we will be bringing her back to the homeland, back to Scotland, virtually, not in real life. And we'll get to find out all about her designs, how she came to be one of the premier watch designers in the world.
Absolutely. Excited to get them both on the show, but especially have Fiona on the show to talk us through. And the best bit is, she's just as cheeky as we are, so I think that's going to get down a treat. Even Barbara might get a run for her money this time. And then, as you say, that should go out hopefully as the Thursday episode, just after listening to this one. And then we, on the following Monday, can get a deep dive into your exploits at Bremont and the other news that's hit the airwaves with those Seiko releases as well.
And if you can't wait until then, we have a massive back catalogue to go through. Last Thursday, we had Catlin from 10 and 2 and Norcane Watches, previously of Omega, plus Adrian from Bark and Jack. He was on, as we've talked about at the start of the show, great old time with them. Prior to that, we had the folks from Millwood on talking about their 5-year anniversary, a new release that sold out in minutes, as we expected, plus all the charity work they're doing, including some things with ourselves and a charity motorcycle where I will be going tomorrow to see the Beastie in real life and get some shots of it. And we're probably going to go across to Saltair Motorcycles in Scotland over in Edinburgh to do some filming behind the scenes and speak to the people that built the motorcycle based on watch designs, watch parts, and fusing the best of both worlds together. So that's one to look out for. So thanks for listening, guys. We're at Mondays and Thursdays. If you're not on our Instagram, you should be. Lots of cool things there. Not just memes, not just those really exceptional memes that get all the greatest amounts of interactivity, but we've got all the new releases in there. Mizzio doing a fantastic job. You should have been playing along at home with his show notes. He puts a lot of time and energy into them, and we know that you guys love them. And our website is scottishwatches.co.uk. And if you get any ideas, drop us an email. There's a contact form on there. Or if you want to do it old school, info@scottishwatches.co.uk. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys again soon.
Take care. We'll be right back.